Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Pop That Mama podcast. In this episode, we have Sophie with us, who is on the podcast to share her positive birth story. As always, get yourself comfortable and enjoy. Welcome, Sophie.
Thank you.
Lovely to have you here. Yeah, amazing. I know you're tuning in from France. Is it nice and sunny?
It is actually very sunny. I've had to close a curtain because it was blinding me.
Yeah, it looks a lot sunnier than here. So why don't you start by just telling us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, so I am a first-time mum. I gave birth 5 months ago here in France, and I run an alpaca farm here with my husband, so we're self-employed. Haven't necessarily always been a very maternal person until wanting my own baby and having her. And from doing your birth box and experiencing it myself, I now just want to know everyone's birth stories.
Oh, lovely. Did you find that you listened to my podcast for your birth?
The podcast. Wow. The obsession, I think, really came afterwards. It was the birth box and prepping before the birth, and now I'm a little bit obsessed.
Yeah, you can get obsessed with birth stories, can't you? Because they're all so different.
They're so different, and quite rightly so. And I really think that everyone, when you listen to your body, you know what it needs, and there is no one way fits all at all.
Yeah, absolutely. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your pregnancy journey? Obviously, you're in France, how it was different, your maternity care, and then what you went, what you did to really prepare your mindset for birth.
Yeah. So here in France, I would say the care is impeccable. We were offered, I think it was 7 1-to-1 sessions to prepare for birth and parenthood, me and my husband Will, with the midwife that we had here. And I think at first she was very impressed with how we were just riding it very easily throughout the pregnancy, but at the same time she was partially concerned that we didn't have a plan as to what we wanted to do and how we wanted to do it, and we were just kind of coasting through it. I think because we were focusing on the business and it was our busy period. I had a summer pregnancy, which is when the tourism side really ramps up here, and so I knew I needed to look a bit more into things and to get a plan for myself at some point. And I think it was during some pregnancy insomnia I found flicking through TikTok just kept me in a relaxed state. So I was still resting, and I found you, and I really resonated with your messages. And throughout my pregnancy, early on in my pregnancy, I witnessed three alpaca births, natural births, that just was fascinating. And I was so impressed. And two of them were first time mums as well in my herd, in my field. And I just was in awe of it and was so proud of them that they didn't need anything. But, they're first time mums. They've never seen it before. They don't know it. And I'm watching your video saying our bodies are designed for this. And it's what we've been doing for, forever. And I just thought, yes, yes, yes. And carried on, followed you on Instagram and just carried on sort of going, oh, is this the one for me? Is this what I want to be doing? And then jumped in to Birth Box and started really listening and learning about birth. So, I was going to the midwife to learn physiologically what happens and how it happens and then what my options were here in France. So attentive. I had so many appointments here, different appointments for scan. I think we get 4 scans here as norm. So what was really comforting is I had a an 8 week scan as standard here. And you know, that's always comforting when you see everything's going okay. And then the 12 week scan. And again, I think where I resonated with your videos was the due date, the dreaded due date for everything, rather than a due window. And from my first appointment to the next two scans, my due date was moved three times. And also, as standard in France, they go with a 41-week gestation period. So already I'm knowing that that is different to the UK being 40 weeks. So I know it's just not a date. So I really, you know, really just
really lucky, clicked. I must say. Pressures here is insane.
Yeah, I can see that. And even at one of my sessions with my midwife, I said, well, what happens if I go past 41 weeks? And at no point was in this could be different in different places in France. I'm in a very rural area in West France, and at no point induction was mentioned. She said, you'll be asked to go in every 2 days for observation. And I think we got up to 41 weeks and 6 days, and then she kind of stopped the conversation, and that was that.
Hold on, you went to 41 weeks and 6 days?
Oh, no, I didn't. Sorry.
When you were talking. Okay, yeah.
When we were planning, and I said, what happens if I actually only made it to 38 weeks and 1 day?
Oh, wow.
So the whole due date, and she had told me to prepare from 37 weeks on, that was normal and it's not considered premature or anything. So I was ready, at 38 weeks. When it actually started happening, all I was excited.
Lovely. Why don't you tell us your story? I'm all ears. I'm so excited.
Yeah. So I was 38 weeks, and it was the evening, and it was a really nice sunny evening in early October when I had done my evening animal bits. I'd spent some time with my alpacas and spoken to the neighbours over the wall, and they'd asked me how I was and, you know, how you are at the end of pregnancy. And I was actually sitting in my front garden with my mother-in-law, who had come to stay to be there and look after the farm for the labour, so that we just could be in the moment and, you know, not have to contact anyone to look after the dog, the house, the other pets. And we were just having drinks in the garden in the, you know, with the sunset, and I felt what I would describe as a similar to a period pain. And having had Braxton Hicks for the last 3 months of my pregnancy, I knew it was different, but I didn't know if that was it. I think as a first timer, you just don't know. You have that constant thought in your head, what's it going to feel like? How will I know? And I actually didn't say anything to anyone. And I just sort of looked at the time, and then I felt another one a few minutes later, and then it was a half hour before the next, and I didn't tell anyone. I think being at 38 weeks, and actually the day before I had been sent into the hospital for observation for temporary high blood pressure that then eased, I didn't want to be the person that cried labour for the next few weeks. I don't know if that sounds really silly, but so I just carried on, ate dinner with Will and my mother-in-law. And it was probably 4 hours in, about 11 o'clock at night, I actually turned to my husband and said, I've been having contractions for the last few hours. I'd even, a couple of hours before then, text my friend going, just so I don't go mad, what does it feel like when you're going to live? And she knew. She was like, yeah, if you're asking, you're probably starting. So we stayed up for the next hour, and he was very much clock watching, because he knew in his head, the midwife had told him, with these contractions at this time and this many, that's when you take her to the hospital. And in his head, that was his job, was when we go into the hospital, because a hospital birth was what we'd planned. You know, my hopes were spontaneous labour, a hospital birth, movement, comb, pain relief when needed, and hopefully, you know, natural birth. And so, yeah, we sat there waiting, and actually my contractions dropped off. So we went to bed and we went to sleep. And I think it was 2:30 in the morning. I woke up, walked to our toilet, and had a Hollywood style breaking of my waters. And it was, just so excited. And I called my husband, and I just remember looking up, and I remember feeling the biggest smile on my face going, "It's actually happening." And he woke his mum up, because, you know, I think men need that bit of extra support. And she was lovely and made me a cup of tea. And whilst my hospital bags were packed, baby's bags were packed, I still needed just a few extra clothes, because I don't know about anyone else, but at the end of my pregnancy, I thought, well, I can't pack these because I need to wear them. So I'm just packing those last bits. And trying to just relax, and the contractions hadn't come back yet. And Will was just going, "Okay, we need to go to the hospital now. We need to go to the hospital now." I was going, "No, it's fine. It's fine." He's going, "It's the one thing they told us, if your waters break, you go to the hospital." And we had been told that. So
he sounds like he's a man who follows instructions to a T.
But I guess his mum, you know, had been through it twice herself. She was relaxed, I was relaxed, and I gave in to him in the end. And I think it was about an hour and a half to 2 hours after my waters break, we were at the hospital. They tested and said, "Yep, that was your amniotic fluids. We'll admit you." My contractions came back in.
Wow, they would admit you at that point?
Yeah.
Gosh, because here, you know, it's all about centimetres and it's all about being in active labour. So they were quite happy to give you a room.
Yeah, they gave us a room, our own room, ensuite, and that was our room during our entire stay. Monitored, put me on monitor for a bit, and the contractions had come back in the car, I think, because it was a familiar, dark and warm place. They had started up again. And they basically left us in the room and just left me to it. And said, you know, "Call us if you need us." I think they came in around 7 a.m. So we got to hospital about 4 or half 4 in the morning.
And is it late? Do they have labouring rooms and birth centre, or what? Where were you?
Yeah, so they have, they'd put me on the maternity ward. So where you go and stay after you have your baby, as far as I know, when I'd had my tour, they were very good. Let me had a look at all the birth rooms, labouring rooms before, so that I could visualise. They were really actually in tune with what we were wanting. And their birth rooms had, I can't remember what they're called, you know, like scarves, swing, you know, that you could use, and birth balls and the peanut, you know, and the baths, and yeah, really great things, speakers. And although that was when I was glad I did the tour during my prep, because as much as they had all of these things, it still looked very clinical. So when I'm reading the hospital website saying, "Oh, this is called the nature room," and I was thinking, "Oh, that sounds wonderful, that sounds like a real comfort room," when I actually saw it, it didn't look how it sounded. It was very clinical. So I was very glad to go and tour it before labour, because then it got in my head what it looked like, and it wasn't, you know, like a living room or nicely decorated home bathroom. They left us to it, and then around 7 a.m, so 3 hours in ish, told me I could go and get some breakfast. There was a room, and you know, go and help yourself. So the French breakfast is sort of tartines, so there's bread and bowls for coffee, and if you want hot chocolate, and natural yogurt and fruit juice, you know, very simple, but, you know, sort of all the things that kind of you're like, yes, I am gonna help myself to that, and feel my, bring up my energy. Yeah. and again got left to it. I think at one point I got monitored in the morning and had a vaginal exam, and they told me I was about 1 centimeter dilated. It's like, cool, okay. They brought us in a lunch. They brought me in a lunch around lunchtime. You're never going to miss a meal in France. That's a particular culture rule. You know, everyone relax, have a meal. The meal made me laugh a lot because it was because I think I was, you know, last on the list because I wasn't, I guess, meant to be there for catering. I got a very traditional dish that a lot of French people probably wouldn't eat, and it's called andouette, and it's a sausage. It's awful. It's a sausage made from the intestines of an animal.
Lovely. Just what you need before you labour. Imagine that coming right up later.
But we lovingly, and you know, lovingly call it poo sausage because it does have a particular smell. And my husband loves it and I hate it. And actually during my pregnancy, he had ordered one at a restaurant and I was upwind of him, and it was quite a hysterical moment. So what was great was we were laughing.
It made you laugh, know. Yeah.
It made me laugh. And I knew that laughing was good for labour. And we had been watching, in between, I'd done a few meditations. We'd watched some comedy shows. We'd just had a bit of a laugh. We'd been chatting to, you know, the family group chat just to say, you know, it's going to be some time, but we're here. And it's just been all quite nice. And I just carried on.
And was Will quite happy that you were then there, like kind of separately?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I think so. And he was quite happy that andouette was served, and he had gotten he went and got sausage. Me a ham. Yeah, his poo sausage was there, and he got sent into the ensuite to get rid of it, and he ate it in the bathroom.
Oh my gosh! Perfect.
Yeah, exactly. And actually, it was after lunch things really ramped up for me. My contractions got really intense. I was actually very sick, which I didn't know could happen during labour. I didn't know it was like a natural part of it. So that surprised me. I always thought if you were ill or nauseous, it was due to pain relief. Didn't know it was just a natural thing. And the nurse came in and just said, you know, it's normal, it's part of it. It means it's happening. And so I was okay. And things really, really ramped up for me. And I actually said to Will, and the whole pregnancy, no epidural. It really, I just need to be able to move. I feel like I would be a prisoner if I had an epidural. And they were really ramping up to the point where I said to Will, I think I might take an epidural. And he said, yeah, are you sure? And it's like, oh, I don't know. Let's call them and see what my options are for now. And I think I got offered diazepam. And where I'd been so nauseous and was still feeling very nauseous and had been sick, I said, I don't think I'm going to get on with that, actually. And she said, how about a bath? And I just went, oh, and I just suddenly, you know, felt a fuzzy feeling, and a bath is exactly what I want. I'd already taken a shower earlier, so I knew, yeah, I thought a bath is great. And I had a bit of an issue, actually. I don't know if it's because my waters had broken, but I found lying down or sitting down really quite uncomfortable and painful. So I had spent most of the day standing up, swaying, moving. It was a shame because I'd practiced on a birth ball for the last few months and I could not use one. And this was around 6 p.m. so it was about 23 hours after my first contraction, and they said, but before a bath we need to do some more monitoring, which meant lying on my back on a bed. And I said, no, I can't, it's too painful, it's just like with the contractions. And they settled for a vaginal exam. They said, we'll at least do that. And they told me I hadn't really progressed. I was still at 1 centimeter. And I just thought, oh, how it's been so intense. Anyway, so I had a bath, and it was in a bathroom, not one of the birthing rooms, not one of the clinical rooms. And I hadn't actually been taken. They did. Sorry, you did ask me, do they have labouring rooms? And they did have that was where they did the monitoring for me, but they didn't put me in there. I think because when they examined me, I was, you know, centimeter wise, not very dilated perhaps. So that's why they kept me in the, you know, more of a day room. So I went in the bath, and in there, it was a lot darker than the day room actually, because I had two windows in there. The daylight was very, very bright. And in the bath, it was dim. It was warm. We had the music on, which was my relaxing, like piano music. And I had the comb. The comb was very, very good. And I was, yeah, riding those waves and the contractions. And Will was really helping me. Some of the contractions were really intense. And I wasn't breathing through it properly. And he would remind me of those breathing techniques, which was incredible. And something I forgot to tell you during the planning and pregnancy with Will, I was really worried that he wasn't 100% on board with the hypnobirthing and what we were doing. And also doula is not in his culture, I think. You know, I think, like you said, he likes instructions. And yet he was the perfect birthing partner and was there. And I do think it, you know, you have those sections on your birth box. And I asked him to read them and watch and listen. And he was there. I think the way he says it is, whilst it's not for him, he wasn't the one giving birth. So he just knew he had to be there for me. And he was really good. You know, sometimes I think I had like a, you know, a micro snooze in the bath, and I woke up going, ow, 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 ow. He's like, breathe, breathe, do your breathing, come on. And he's like, no, 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 you're not doing it. And he said I had like a mole on my stomach, and he could see when it rocked in the right way, I was doing the right breathing. So you know, that helped him, help me. And I had no idea on time in that bathroom. It could have been 5 minutes. Actually, it was 3 hours. And he was just topping up the water every now and then, the hot water. And I suddenly realized the sensation had changed from like a period pain area into my bottom. And I felt a different sensation. And I just went to Will, I'm pushing.
No.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, I'm not, wait. Don't tell me we're about to have a baby. So was it a false push? You tell me to go. No, tell the story.
No, yeah. Well, yeah, I went, I'm pushing. And he went, what? I'm pushing. Well, stop. No, it's not me. I was like, I think my body's doing it. It's happening. And he said, do you want me to get someone? And I said, no. He said, what do you mean, no? And I think, you know, thinking back on it, in hindsight, it was my body. I wanted to be on my own. I wanted to be there. I wanted to do it. And my body was just doing it. And I didn't want to be interrupted. But at the time I went, oh yeah, what do I mean? Yeah, you probably should get someone, I suppose, even though I knew I didn't really want someone. Didn't want to be interrupted. And they came in and they said, well, Sophie, you need to get out of the bath and we need to take a look at you.
They didn't use the mirror.
They didn't use a mirror, no. This was kind of our drama. There was no drama, but this is our story that I just brings the humour back into it. So I found it really difficult because I was having contraction after contraction with very little rest. And in the end, I couldn't get out of the bath for that reason. You know, I didn't have strength anywhere else in my body. It's quite mean when you think about it. They emptied the bath water so that I almost had no option. And so I found a place next to the bath, leaning over the bath and kneeling down next to it. And I just remember it was still very intense and I couldn't really focus on the room. And I just remember feeling someone drying me, you know, because you're a bit cold and uncomfortable. I just remember I felt so loved, and it was Will. And he was telling me, you know, drying me up and everything. And before I knew it, there was a wheelchair in the room. And they said, right, we need to examine you. And I just looked at it and went, I'm not getting in that wheelchair. But knowing that lying down, not in the bath, but lying down on a bed and sitting down was uncomfortable and painful, I said, I'll walk. I'm like, if you want. So Will packed up my bag with the speaker that still had the music going, so quite classical piano music. And so they said to Will, you push the wheelchair in case she needs it. And I said, right, I'm going to lean
They wanted
on your
to
back.
Move you to this other room. Was that what the plan was?
Yeah, yeah, okay. This was just the bathroom. This had
right.
No,
so they didn't
equipment.
Have all the stuff. Right, got you.
No, it wasn't a birthing room. It was a bathroom, and yeah. So they wanted to move me into a monitoring room. So we're going through the labour and delivery ward. There's people at desks, and Will's pushing the wheelchair. I'm closed eyes, pretty much. I can only really see my feet, hands on his shoulders. And we're going through, and Will said it was like a procession. And everyone's going, oh, bravo, wow, you know, like, why is she walking? And then stopping to push. And I just remember seeing my legs like looking like jelly. They were wobbling.
So can you describe what feeling you were having when you say I was trying pushing? What was going on? Was it like a bit uncontrollable? What was it?
Yeah, like you say, it was that uncontrollable urge to bear down. I wasn't actively pushing, you know, but I could feel that was the sensation. I think I could feel it, but at the same time, I had jelly legs. And then we'd carry on moving with the music, with the wheelchair, with the group of people following me. And I went into one of the monitoring rooms again, and they put me on the bed, and I thought, right, they're going to attach me up to the monitor, I guess, I can't remember what it's called on the telly.
CTG.
Yes, that's the one. But they didn't do that. They went to do a vaginal exam, and actually she took one look, had a massive smile, looked at her colleague and nodded and went, yeah. You know, she's just like, it's coming. And
but I don't understand how you went from, I think I might need an epidural. Should have a few more contractions. I think I need to push now. I'm 1 centimeter, I might have an epidural. Classic, just shows you that labor does not follow a pattern. Yeah. But yeah, carry on. This is great. No,
that bath was my savior. It really was. And thank you to that midwife that suggested it. But then they said, right, so now we need to move you into a birthing room. Here's the wheelchair. And I went, I'm not getting in the wheelchair. So we had the exact same scenario, because the birthing room that we're putting in was two doors down from the original bathroom I was in. So it was ridiculous, really. And this was, you know, when I look back, this was my interruption. I think I really think that I could have and I should have birthed at the side of that bath when I look back. But at the time, who knew?
When you had that instinct, the initial instinct, yeah.
When I felt that love with Will drying me with the towel and I was comfortable. But yeah, it was the need for the monitoring interrupted it a bit. And I think with hindsight, now that I've done it, but you know, first time mum, you've never done it, you don't know, you kind of listen to the people that you think know best and have your best interest, you know, there. Anyway, into the birthing room, and then they definitely wanted to monitor me. So they put the straps on and asked me to get into the bed. And I was like, I really don't want to go on my back. It's my worst nightmare. So they popped me on all fours. I mean, ideally, I wanted to be standing, I think. I thought, right, okay, I'll just do this. I didn't really have it in me to kind of voice what I wanted. I just needed to do it. But I had a cannula come out, so then... that didn't help. So then they needed to put another one in. But actually, from the monitoring, my baby's heart rate had gone right down. Had really dropped. So they were, sadly, then wanted to coach me into pushing and really active pushing. I remember just finding that really annoying, you know, being told to push. And one of their techniques was to really use my name as well. So I couldn't really ignore them, because when you hear your name, you are alerted to it, aren't you? And I just remember saying at one point, right, hang on, I need to wait for a contraction. And this was where we do speak French, and we're bilingual, we're not fluent as such. And especially in that situation, I kind of lost a bit of that. So I was getting Will to help me. And I said to him, I need to wait for a contraction. I mean, contraction is contraction in French. So it was helpful. And they said, yes, yes, yes. But then they made me push. And then they said, right, you need to turn over. And they wanted my legs in the stirrups. So I sort of listened. And we did that. And I did find that more painful, a lot more painful. And even doing some birth prepping and breathing techniques with my original midwife, she even, when I was pregnant, she said, you find it easier to do when you're leaning forward rather than backwards when we were practicing. She said, I always found it more difficult leaning backwards or on my back. So this was the situation we were in, and Will could read the room. And I was still protesting a bit, going, no, I want to stand up. Will read the room and they were worried. They were really worried about the baby. And he sort of said, come on, Soph, this is what we've got to do. And actually part of our birth plan was, it was fluid. You know, if something happened, you know, we will change and we'll go with what needed to be done at the time. And it appeared that was what needed to be done at the time, was really active pushing. They were like, we need to get her out, and we need to get her out now. Come on. And so I think after she was born 20 minutes after being on my back and legs in stirrups. So it was a quick one. Yeah.
No other intervention needed.
No other intervention. No. No episiotomy. I tell you what, it did hurt. It did hurt. And to the point where afterwards, when she was out, I said to Will, did they cut me? Because it had really hurt. And he said, no, they thought about it. He said, I saw her reaching for the scalpel, but then she changed her mind. But there wasn't, you know, I think they did tell me when her head was out, and they said, Sophie, look, the head's out. I really don't remember that bit too well, actually. It's that your brain fogs, doesn't it? But and Will did say, yeah, you managed to have about a minute's rest then, one, you know, probably 1 minute. But for me, it was constant. And then suddenly she was out and she was on my chest, you know, which was lovely. And we had planned on delayed cord clamping, which isn't popular in France, actually. That's the one thing during our prep. They were like, the hospital may not let you do that, or they may only let you do so many minutes. We completely forgot in that moment, and they didn't do it at all. It was too late for us. And we were like, okay, what are you going to do? And actually, they do cord blood testing. I don't know if you've heard of that. And I got the results afterwards, and they were really quite poor. She, I think my cord must have been compressed, and that's why they were like, you know, because I remember at one point during those 20 minutes saying, can I stand up? Please, can I stand up? And they were saying no, because you could move and the cord, we could lose it completely, kind of thing. We're like, we just need to get on with it. So whilst it wasn't my perfect envisioned birth, I have my baby girl. I did it without pain relief, which that wasn't the plan. my plan was pain relief as needed, you know. I think at the time as well, I didn't think of it. I guess I didn't need it.
Yeah, clearly. And I can't believe you even carried on with the pushing and yeah, yeah. With absolutely nothing. Wow.
Yeah.
I bet your husband was blown away by you.
I think so. We were both just like in this real love bubble, I think. And I remember when we were telling family, I was like, Will was amazing, because he was my rock during it. And he was sort of similar about me. So it was really, really nice. And what's lovely is in France, you get 2 hours skin to skin as standard in the birth room. There's no moving or anything like that. And I remember family, because we text family pictures and everything, and they were saying, what's her weight? We're going, we don't know. What do you mean you don't know? Well, they haven't weighed her yet,
So
and
lovely, so lovely.
they just leave the room, and they sort of come in and ask, oh, what's her name, and a few bits like that. But no,
And any tearing or anything, or was it all
I
intact?
had, this was the only time, so we say our French is okay and everything, but we did have to call a friend. I had two very small tears, so one at the bottom, where I needed two stitches, and that was what I just couldn't understand, because they were telling me about aftercare. So hang on, let me call a friend. She can explain it all to me. And one right near my urethra, which they said will naturally just fix itself. And actually, I think what also makes, when I think back to the birth, makes it all fine, is that I healed so very quickly. I think you dread it. Everyone tells you about the first this and the first that, and how painful it was. And I didn't actually find that myself. And again, as standard in France, they want you to stay in hospital for 4 days after the birth, after a natural birth, a week after a cesarean section. And they were like, you can go home earlier, but we prefer you not to. And I remember during my pregnancy going, oh, I'm going to go crazy for 4 days being in the hospital. But you're in that little newborn bubble, and I really lent into it, and it was
Yeah.
fine.
I also stayed at the hospital for a week, and I look back and I'm like, do you know what? It was really nice to be able to press the buzzer, needed help with breastfeeding. You feel like you're held in that time. But towards the end, we were like, right, get us out, self-discharge, like, wow, like falling out of there. Like, they're like, you don't have a car seat. We're like, just break through. So, but no, it's really nice to have that space held and to have the support. Wow, what a story. Oh my gosh, I'm so glad I didn't read your notes because I was genuinely like, where is this gonna go?
Yeah,
So
it
obviously,
was
yeah, you've been there before, pregnant and not knowing much, and it sounds like you did everything in your power to educate yourself. But for that nervous listener who's listening to your story going, oh gosh, like I'm still really nervous, or I don't quite believe in myself. What would you say to them? What kind of encouraging message or tip would you like to leave them with?
I think listen to your body. If you have an instinct, lean into it, and try and tell whoever it is you trust there, so that they can pass that on. And I think for me, the thing, because it was painful, and I do remember at the time when I was pushing, thinking, how do people do this more than once? I actually remember that thought, because I remember thinking it was quite funny, but also very true. Was that it's because you heal. You heal because, like you say, your body is designed to do it. It's not like breaking a leg, is it? It's not that pain, it's not that injury. So yeah, that's why I think.
Lovely. Oh, well, thank you so much. I'm really excited to put this episode out. And if you've got photos or videos that you want to share with people, I can put them on Instagram and kind of share. But no pressure. But thank you so much, and well done to your husband for all of the amazing support. And
Thank
good
you.
luck
And all
with
the best.
everything.
Oh, good luck to you with number two.
Yeah, I got really inspired by the pushing bit. So yeah, just the message I've taken away is definitely listen to your body. Yeah. Oh, thanks. Okay.
Thank
Lovely to
you.
see you. Bye bye.